And it's just always great to see ideas put out there and people try to figure out solutions and try to improve things. One of the concerns or one of the areas I would like to see maybe a little more input in creative ideas is reducing homelessness in the city of Portland. One of the things that I think we need to do is figure out more solutions, figure out ways to put people into housing, have an understanding, again, from the businesses to the homeless, that let's all work together. Let's be a collective force of creative ideas to solve the problem. Let's not work against each other. Let's not do that. The most positive way is to work together as a collective force and to solve the issue. Reducing homelessness can be done. To what degree? That's yet to be known. Look at the kindness of that individual today, unknown to all of us, to look outside through this city and say, you know what? I'm going to make a difference today. Nobody knew that. But those are the kind of things that can create the change. The idea begins the progress. And that is what has happened today. That is historic today, what has happened. And this needs to continue. The optimism which Mr. Hales has portrayed through this city is being carried today in a more positive manner. And that will create the change. And this individual point blank stated that you have led the way on that. And this is a historic moment today. And that's all I need to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good morning.
Good morning, council members. Charles Johnson. Unfortunately, unlike Joe Walsh, I have not read this report, but there are two issues that you definitely need to take into consideration. One of the issues you sort of can't see right now, because when you look through this chamber, the only good news on this issue is that the only person of an ethnic or racial minority is a city employee. Other than that, in this chamber right now, I don't see any other people that are not obviously white. And that relates to technology. There is a technology barrier for poor people, and that also applies sometimes along racial and ethnic lines. So I hope that when we look at this situation and we take this report into consideration, the city will maintain its fine reputation for trying to reach out to all populations. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else signed up on this?
That's all who signed up, unless I didn't get the name right. Anybody else wish to testify?
Can I make one more statement?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
You didn't want to speak, though.
I have very little to say. I bet from here. Okay. Just have mercy. Have mercy.
Yeah. Thank you.
I don't need to keep talking. I would cry.
We hear you. Thank you. Lightning, yes.
Yes, I would like to say that there's a purpose and meaning for people being out in front of City Hall. There's a purpose and meaning for this individual making this kind, generous donation. There's a purpose and meaning for Intel being here on the same day. I ask Intel to make the largest bid at the auction. Thank you.
Good idea. I like that.
Thank you all. All right. We need a motion, I believe, to adopt.
Move to accept the report.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, I also note that we had a nice other decision this morning that the Ducks are now will be bowl eligible. And note that we have more than one great higher education institution in our city. We tend to partner a lot with Portland State University and the Portland Community College and Mount Hood Community College. And we also have not only the University of Oregon, but many other fine statewide and national educational communities right here in Portland. So thanks to the students who worked on this and took the time to present to us, and thank you to those who commented. I will note that the report does include a recognition that not everybody has access to smartphones and broadband, and that that is a piece that the city has adopted the broadband plan, and we need to look at how we're going to fund that. Because in order for everybody to participate in some of the strategies that, pretty much most of the strategies that are mentioned in the report, we do need to make sure that everybody has access to the technology. And with that, I'm very glad to vote aye.
Hales.
I think I'll skip the glass of wine for reading this because it's pretty headsy stuff, but it's really it's really impressive and very, as I said, very provocative. And I love the fact that we have this dialogue with the University of Oregon as well as with Portland State. So very happy to accept this report. Aye. Okay, item 618, please.
Amend City of Portland Accounting Administrative Rule ARC FIN 6.04, Accounts Receivable.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of City Council. My name is Jane Kingston, and this is the first time I've spoken.
The microphone up a little bit. Thank you.
My name is Jane Kingston, and this is the first time I've spoken directly to Council.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We hope we're not too intimidating.
Okay. Not yet. I'm the City Controller and Manager of the City's Accounting Division in the Office of Management and Finance. I'm joined here by Celia Heron. She's a member of OMF's policy team. We're here to speak to you today briefly about proposed changes to an accounting administrative rule and to answer any questions you might have about these changes. By way of background, I'd like to note that the city has adopted a set of accounting administrative rules which are part of our comprehensive financial management policies, sometimes referred to as CFMP. These policies are designed to provide direction to city bureaus in their financial practices, and the accounting rules in particular are designed to guide citywide and bureau-specific accounting practices. Current versions of all of these policies and rules are always available on the City Auditor's Office webpage on Portland Online. As the city's central financial management organization, OMF will be undertaking a complete review and update of the full set of comprehensive financial management policies, including the accounting administrative rules. For today, though, our focus is on one specific accounting administrative rule, 6.04, on accounts receivable. Accounts receivable is the term for monies due to the city from its customers, and they're presented as assets in the financial statements. Now, you may have noticed during your review that the majority of the changes are housekeeping in nature, minor edits that clarify or strengthen the rule. These are primarily intended to update the language in the rule to reflect the correct titles of responsible positions and bureaus, and to reflect the change from the days of IBIS to our current accounting structure and practices in SAP. If you have questions about the housekeeping changes, we'd be glad to answer those questions. There is one substantive change in the revised accounting administrative rule: the addition of language that provides direction on circumstances under which certain types of account receivable can be forgiven and subsequently adjusted to zero on the city's accounting records. The current version of 6.04 contains no such guidance. A major driver of these changes is that generally accepted accounting principles require the city to present accurate asset balances in its financial statements. The new administrative rule language outlines how the chief administrative officer may consider and approve the forgiveness of debt for certain accounts receivable, those determined to be de minimis in nature and more costly to pursue and collect than they're actually worth. Once a debt is forgiven, it's legally canceled. Now, this is different from a write-off, which is an accounting adjustment, and that does not cancel debt. A prime example of de minimis debt would be a number of small overpayments to city employees on their paychecks that resulted from rounding errors or from the transition from the city's old accounting system to SAP. The revised accounting administrative rule directs that a forgiveness threshold must be documented and that it can be approved by the CAO. thus establishing a dollar amount under which de minimis amounts owed to the city can be properly forgiven and then reduced to zero in the accounting records. OMF recommends this change because it achieves two objectives. It provides a practical, cost-effective approach to accounts receivable collection and reporting, while continuing to ensure that city bureaus use auditable accounting practices. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
So if I understand this right, is it still true that anything over $50 goes to collection?
Yes.
Okay.
At the appropriate time.
It's only de minimis, you know, these kind of transactions you described that are less than $50 that we're talking about.
That's correct.
Okay. So I guess one of my questions would be, why did you choose $50 to send it to collections?
That's a great question. We actually, I actually went to the Oregon Revised Statutes and looked at the rules related to gifts and gift giving to public officials. And the limitation there is $50. And so in some sense, this might be equated to a gift if you're forgiving that debt. And so we decided that that would be a reasonable number to use.
Okay. It doesn't say what the collection, if the collection agency gets a percentage of the collected debt, but the policy doesn't say what that percentage is limited to, and that also is a loss to the city.
Actually, the collection agency does not receive a percentage of the debt. They receive a fee that is on top of the debt. And so when it's collected, the city actually receives that whole amount back, if they're able to collect the whole amount.
And how much is the fee set up?
The fee itself is a percentage, but it is on top of the debt. Is it in addition to the debt?
Okay. I have some, it will not surprise my colleagues, I have several detailed questions about the rules, and I apologize if these were disseminated earlier. I must have missed them. I guess I'm going to start with the biggest concern I have, and that's on page numbers. It's the write-off guidelines.
Yes.
Well, first of all, it's titled guidelines, but then section one says bureaus shall write off these amounts, so it's actually standards that they have to write off these amounts. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I'm very concerned about section 2, where it says that under 5,000, the bureau director or the bureau director's designee writes it off and has to. Greater than 5 and up to 25,000, the bureau director does. But over 25,000, both the bureau director and the chief administrative officer have to write off these unpaid debts. There is no involvement of elected officials. And when we looked at the housing policy, which Commissioner Fish brought forward after the transfer from Portland Development Commission to Housing Bureau, there was a gradation of when the commissioner in charge gets to write that off the debt or versus when it comes to council. And I'm concerned that this could be millions of dollars that people who are not elected officials get to write off.
So you would like to see some language in there that at some level requires input from council and the mayor?
Or the sign-off of, first of all, the commissioner in charge, but at a certain level that the entire council should sign off.
What's the current practice?
This is the current practice.
This is unchanged.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was going to say, this is not language we're changing.
It is not.
But it's highlighting that we have this language that has a great degree of discretion, particularly since part of the reason for doing this change is because we no longer have the chief financial officer. And so all of the authority goes to the controller and the chief administrative officer, who both work in the same bureau. And so some of the bureaus with debts, the bureau director and the chief administrative officer, are in the same bureau. So I'm concerned that there isn't the right level of council or commissioner in charge oversight. So that's one suggestion or question that I have.
Okay.
I do question whether the word should be shall rather than may, or because later in forgiveness of debt, it says the chief administrative officer may authorize the forgiveness. It may be deemed insufficient. It may establish a forgiveness threshold of $50 or less. And then it says will rather than shall. So I think those are some detailed questions that Mayor would like some more time to look at. It's not clear in that forgiveness of debt section, is this for the statement from the background analysis from the Office of Management and Finance talks about the cost of researching collecting small overpayments from employees a lot. And so I'm gathering that that's partly to do with it, but I'm also understanding from your presentation that it's small debts from citizens, customers of various bureaus as well.
That may be true, yes.
So I'd like to get that clarified. I wonder why in the public involvement statement it says that no public involvement was necessary. It was a city internal accounting procedure. I would have felt more comfortable if it had been run by the city budget advisors, or somebody, because there are some potentially significant policy decisions in forgiving debts. In fact, Mayor, in my first 3 weeks in the Bureau of Development Services, I'm looking at liens and other fines. I think that there's probably some bigger policy questions that council should be discussing so that it's more predictable who gets fines waived, for example, how that process happens, what the level of reduction is. There is code to some extent, but I'm still having the city attorney help me dive into exactly what does it mean and the authority of the commissioner in charge, the bureau director, and the auditor, because debts go to the auditor for collection in some cases. It seems like this is a policy mm-hmm. question that we could benefit from a little additional work, although I do appreciate the majority of the cleanup that's in this proposal.
Okay. I do want to advise you that there is a specific process we follow in getting input on the proposed edits to the existing policy, and I believe it's entirely likely that someone from the city budget office did receive the draft changes and was allowed requested to opine on that if there were comments, and I will double check that.
No, they did, because I asked them, and they did, and they didn't see any significant, and I probably got it in my inbox too. I'm a little behind on my emails right now. And sometimes when there are administrative rules, it takes coming to council for me to have it right in front of me and to tease through all of these questions and then to have the policy discussion up here. So I appreciate that there has been due process before this and want to weigh in at this point. Thank
you. Good. Well, I assume there's no particular urgency on adopting these, right? They don't have to be adopted by the beginning of the next fiscal year, or do they?
We would like to move forward with it because there is actually an action that we would like to take related to some payroll amounts that we have due back to the city related to as I cited as an example, some minor errors related to rounding and corrections from the transition from the old system to the SAP system. And so we would like to proceed with the forgiveness part of that where we've got, you know, very small dollar items that should be adjusted.
Right. No, I understand. They'd like to put it to use, and you've done good work in creating the proposal.
Correct.
But there's not some apocalyptic financial problem that's going to happen the morning of July 1 if we wait another week or two and have a chance for further.
That is absolutely true.
Okay, just checking.
After last week, we were just checking.
Celia Heron with the Office of Management and Finance Policy Team. As Jane alluded to, we are going to be undertaking a more comprehensive review of all the accounting administrative rules, and in particular, Commissioner Fritz, we were looking at those thresholds that you pointed out, and did they need to be tweaked? We decided there hadn't been enough input and conversation about those to make those at this time, but that we've definitely flagged those, and now I flagged them again as something to be considered. There are other places, and we wanted to look at the interconnection between the different accounting rules so that they all tie together better. So this is a one-off, but I'll be the policy lead organizing some city code updates and some administrative rule updates, and we'll lay that out over the next few months. We would like this passed today, but it's council decision.
Yeah, I think you've raised a good issue about the involvement of the commissioner in charge, not just that issue, but that one, to me, just thinking about the charter authority that typically rests on the commissioner in charge, this is giving an awful lot of bandwidth to somebody other than that. And I'm more comfortable with the accountability of of each of us, not in terms of the bad work is being done, but in terms of the public's understanding of whose problem is this, I think it really rests on us. So I would like to discuss that particular issue some more. So my sense, I mean, there are people that want to testify on this too, but my sense is that we ought to not adopt this today, but give the council a chance to deliberate a little more on it, work with staff some more, perhaps schedule it for a couple of weeks out, you know, to bring it back. And we also have two other members of the council who may have some thoughts about this as well who can't be here today. So,
okay.
Yeah. So thank you, Jane and Celia, for putting this in front of us. Let's see if there's anyone signed up to testify.
No one else signed up.
Okay. Then I'd like to set this over. Maybe the best way to do that would just be to return to my office for now. We'll have a chance for further council discussion and perhaps bring back an amended version, but at any rate, we'll reschedule it after there's been an opportunity for those conversations.
Very good. Thank you so much for your feedback. We really appreciate the input, and we'd be glad to incorporate the changes going forward. So,
good.
Thanks,
Jane. Thanks, Celia. Thank you very much.
And again, I apologize for not getting to you earlier.
So this item is returned to my office, and we're on to 619.
Accept the report on the fiscal year 2012-13 budget note training facility.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Matthew Grum here from Commissioner Saltzman's office. Unfortunately, Commissioner Saltzman and Portland Fire and Rescue Chief Jansons are both currently participating in the David Campbell Memorial. Every year on the morning of June 26, PFNR gathers to pay tribute to the 36 Portland firefighters lost in the line of duty. So you're stuck with me here today. I do have Jay Gao, Finance Manager for Portland Fire and Rescue, if we have any questions. And this really is just a report that responds to the budget note that was part of the fiscal year 2012-13 on the Fire Bureau's training facility. The report is relatively short and straight to the point in that there are real needs to improve PFNR's training facilities, but we all recognize the tight budgets we face. And as the conclusion states, I quote, recognizing the city's current significant financial challenge, PFNR will continue to use the existing facilities and delay any funding request until the city financial condition is improved. If you have any questions, we're happy to attempt to answer them or follow up with later with people who might have better answers.
Okay. Simple enough. Questions?
I would, maybe not now, would just like some more information on looking at whether the new police training facility could be used for both purposes or what other city facilities might be available for some of the training needs.
Excellent. I'll have the chief may follow up with you and see what we can do about that. Excellent.
Yeah, I think the other X factor here is the old training facility that's now the logistics center.
Gideon.
Street. So what happens to that property?
Yeah, we're just starting to talk about that with the light rail and everything, absolutely.
Right, so the light rail station area, probably not the best place for, say, a truck maintenance facility. So who knew? Anyway, that's another one to take up. In fact, the Police Bureau is in the process, of course, of completing that training facility, but they're also looking at the question of some additional space that might be used for vehicle training. So there's some stuff there that might be worth looking at between the two bureaus.
Let's do that. Okay.
Other questions for these two guys? Thanks for the report. Is there anyone signed up to testify?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Okay, so let's take a roll call on accepting the report, please. I guess, do we need a motion? A motion to accept the report, please.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate the diligence in fulfilling the budget report to get this report to us. And like many reports, it opens a further conversation about how are we going to pay for it, whether there are funding in any of the bond measures or what partnering can be done on it. But it's a good baseline for assessing the Fire Bureau's analysis of what they need. Aye.
Hales.
Yeah, here. It's good to have this information. It gives us the chance to look at other possibilities and know what our maintenance and capital liabilities are. So thanks for good work. Aye. Okay. Let's take up 620.
Accept report on utility outage reporting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioner, my understanding is we're here today because the last council asked PBIM to explore the possibility of the city imposing its own utility outage reporting requirements on all utilities, including internet service providers. And the Bureau has explored that possibility and is reporting back on its findings.
Okay, great.
That's exactly right. Thank you. Hi, I'm Jana Papa-Efthimiu, and I'm the Planning and Preparedness Manager at the Bureau of Emergency Management. And I'm here to summarize just ever so briefly our report and then to be available to answer any questions that you may have. So utility outage reporting is relevant to emergency management because we have a role in notifying residents of emergencies and public safety matters. And we manage a public alerts website at publicalerts.org. That's a clearinghouse for information about all kinds of service disruptions in our region. So we took up the issue of utility outage reporting at the behest of the council last year. We met several times with representatives of the utilities, including telecoms, electric, internet, natural gas. The city provides water and sewer. We also looked at the FCC rules and the Oregon PUC rules on outage reporting. We looked to see what other cities are doing, and we conferred with the City Attorney Office, the Office of Community Technology, and the Office of Government Relations to sort of understand clearly what the law is now and where it may be going. What we found is that electric, water, and sewer utilities generally do a good job of voluntary public notifications of outages, including posting information on their website, and they also make annual public reports about service liability to the regulators. Telecommunications providers generally communicate directly with individual account holders about service interruptions, but they do not make public notifications of outages. They have to report those outages to the state PUC and the FCC, but the reports aren't publicized for security reasons. And then finally, no state PUC nor the FCC require reporting on internet outages, both for security reasons and for technology limitations. And in fact, this February, the FCC took up the issue of internet outage reporting, and then their rulemaking procedure, they dropped it and decided they weren't able to pursue it at this time. So bottom line, if Portland were to pursue mandatory public reporting of utility outages, we would be requiring public notifications that are beyond what any other jurisdiction is requiring at this time, or the FCC or the state PUC. Perhaps not surprisingly, we also found that the utilities were strongly opposed to mandatory reporting, even including those that actually do, I think, a quite good job of voluntary reporting. They raised issues related to national security, security of their customers, technical and logistical issues, the protection of proprietary business information, their legal rights under the Constitution and interstate commerce, and a variety of other issues. Our sense was that while it's not impossible to resolve or at least mitigate many of those issues, that it would really require significant investment of resources on the part of the city, and that even so, the resulting regulations would be quite precedent-setting and likely subject to major legal challenges, and that finally, that would require ongoing resources to sort of police and enforce those rules. So while PBIM is not afraid of taking on big challenges to make our city safer and more resilient, and in fact, that is our job, in this case, it seemed that given the other risks that the city faces, such as earthquakes, floods, and winter storms, it does not make sense for us to invest very heavily in utility outage reporting, which is not among the most significant risks that face the city. And in fact, we see an opportunity to achieve many of the benefits of reporting by working with utilities to promote voluntary reporting and to build value in the public alerts website. So that summarizes the report, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Jana.
And I note that you say that the stakeholders raised a bevy of legal issues.
A bevy.
Not just one or two, but a veritable
a
bevy.
A bevy.
A full bevy. All right. Well, thank you. And I guess we should accept the report, so we need a motion for that.
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? No one signed up to testify, I believe. Okay. Roll call.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, Jana, this is more example of your typically excellent work, and thank you for the concise presentation as well as the report. It's wise to scope out things like this and see if it can be done, and I think it's good to bring it to council with a public hearing to say that, actually, no, we probably shouldn't do that. So thank you for doing that. Aye.
Thank you.
Hales.
Yeah, I appreciate you reporting back, but it also is just provocative. I mean, here we had this Smarter Portland presentation, and technology is just moving so fast. I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting last weekend, tried out the Google Glasses, where you get internet access by doing this. Mm-hmm. So the interconnectivity of what the world we live in and the information available to us, think if a substantial portion of the population had those glasses or mm-hmm. something like it, and there was an emergency or an outage, our capacity to get that information out there is expanding exponentially while we're having this meeting by smart people somewhere, some of them in Portland. So, I think the interconnectivity goal of this discussion is mm-hmm. possible, probably without us being a traditional regulator. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds, and yeah, PBIM's nimble enough to help us figure that out. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay, one more item in this morning's calendar, which is 6:21.
Set hearing date 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, August 7, 2013, to vacate portions of Southeast Sherritt Street and Southeast Umatilla Street west of Southeast Grand Avenue.
Morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is John Deo with the City's Bureau of Transportation. The matter I have before you is to set a public hearing date for the proposed vacation of Southeast Sherritt and Southeast Umatilla Streets as petitioned by the City. And if you have any questions about setting the hearing date, I'd be happy to answer them.
Mr. Deo, this is a curious little item. Let me see if I've got this right. BES needed to obtain an easement as part of the Selwood Pump Station project, and the easement impinged on property owned or leased by the Portland Rowing Club. And as part of our discussion with the Rowing Club, we agreed in a settlement that we would consider the possibility of vacating these portions of these streets, which would have the effect of giving the Rowing Club some greater certainty as to their, you know, future lease rights on property where they have houseboats?
That would be correct, yes.
So we didn't promise to vacate the streets. We promised to consider it as part of that proceeding.
That is correct.
Yeah, but now we're actually going to do it.
Well, if you could have my give my staff a briefing before the August 7th hearing, I'd appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank be you. Happy to.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions? No one to testify? And motion to accept the report?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Thank you. And we are in recess until tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m.
2:30, right?
2:30.
You're up.
30?
Yes, you're doing.
You're right. It still says 2 p.m., but it's 2:30. Yeah.